This edition of Nation Talk is being brought to you by Scotiabank. Respecting your past, trusting your future. Think what we can achieve together.
Hello, listeners. Nick Oshawa-Sega here. We're tuned into another interview by Nation Talk. Today we have the pleasure of being joined with Chief Perry Bellegard from, of course, FSIN. Also, I'm sure a lot of you will be familiar, he's going to be running for the next National Chief, and of course the election's taking place at the Special Chiefs Assembly, December 9th, 10th, and 11th in Winnipeg. But first off, how are you doing today?
I'm doing really good, Nick. Thanks for asking.
Wonderful, Perry. Well, of course, appreciate you taking some time off. You know, I can only imagine the schedule. But let's get into, you know, some hard-hitting questions for our audience. So one thing I know a lot of our audience members are keyed into is closing the gap. What is the gap, and how do you propose to close it?
The gap that I always talk about, in Canada, it's a very rich country. You know, land, resource, wealth, there's oil, coal, gas, potash, uranium. It's huge. It's rich. And when you compare Canadians overall, and I always talk about the United Nations Human Development Index. They rated Canada, and everybody else is rated sixth in terms of quality of life. You apply the same indices to Indigenous peoples, we end up being 63rd. That's the gap that exists. So there's still a lot of poverty amongst our people. There's overcrowded housing. There's black mold. There's lack of access to potable water. There's high youth suicides. There's high infant mortality rates amongst our children. There's all these things are a negative thing. And so there's a gap. And there's a huge cost to that gap. And so I've always been saying, if governments, federal, provincial, get their heads around investing in the fastest growing segment of Canada's population, which is young First Nations men and women, ensuring they have the education and the skills and the training needed to participate fully in Canada's economy, that's a good thing. Just think of all it's human capital. And so invest in human capital. And just think of all the positive contributions that can be made from these young men and women, the innovation, their ideas, their energy, their enthusiasm. Like, that's a huge thing. So there's a missed opportunity if that gap continues to exist. And so we've got to really close it now. So I want to put pressure on both federal and provincial crowns, federal provincial governments, to make sure that they get that. This is a reality in Canada, and in 2014, it's just not acceptable. And so we've got to bring about that transformational change, and we can't do it alone. We've got to work together collectively to bring about that change.
Well, that actually ties into my next couple of points as well, too, which, of course, are front and center for a lot of people. So what does treaty implementation mean for First Nations people? Also, you know, how can we advance this process?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, in Canada, we say we're all treaty people. Not only First Nations people, everybody in Canada are treaty people. Because we're basically, if it wasn't for treaties, you wouldn't be able to open up this land, this great country called Canada. So we're all treaty people. And so we're sharing. We're supposedly sharing and mutually benefiting from the land and resource wealth. But again, there's the gap. So we see one side getting richer and the other side not getting richer, not even participating in the economy. And so when we start talking about treaty implementation, we start looking across Canada, and there's many kinds of treaties. Yeah, we have the Robinson-Huron treaties, Robinson-Superior treaties. We have the numbered treaties. We have the modern-day treaties, the self-government agreements. So the whole issue with these treaties is lack of implementation. You know, and the Crown has never come to the table to establish processes to implement these treaties according to their spirit and intent. You know, if there's ever a difference, they all say, oh, let's go to court. We don't want to rely on the Supreme Court of Canada always to fill up Section 35 of Canada's Constitution, which recognizes existing Aboriginal treaty rights. It's in Canada's Constitution. But let's get the Crown engaged to finally find processes to implement the treaties according to their spirit and intent, because we're all in this together. And again, whether it's a treaty right to education, or the treaty right to housing, or the treaty right to health care, or even dealing with urban reserves, they're all tools of economic development. Focus it like that. And that's not only good for one side of the treaty being treaty First Nations people, it's good for everybody. So start embracing concepts like treaty implementation, even concepts like resource revenue sharing. There's a lot of resource wealth in Canada. We've got to mutually benefit, and we can't be excluded anymore, especially in light of the recent Supreme Court decision through Williams, the Chilcotin case, which recognized Aboriginal rights and title. So industry in the provinces can't unilaterally develop things anymore. And I think that's a good thing for First Nations people, because now we can be involved in the economy, creating wealth, creating employment opportunities, but even value added is going to be our respect for the environment and the land and water to make sure that when anything comes down for development, First Nations voices are at the table and we're heard to make sure that the land and waters aren't hurt.
Strong words and wise words. Another point, of course, which is very important for, you know, national audience and obviously for a lot of community members too, is missing and murdered Indigenous women. Many people have called for an inquiry. You know, the Prime Minister so far has declined to call one. What would you say to him to change his mind?
Well, I would say, look, Prime Minister and government, every day, even in today's paper, we're reading another name. There's another name of a young woman that's been abused and battered. And how many more names is it going to take for people to wake up and start realize we have to deal with this issue? How many more names? You know, the list is far too long already. And we say there's two things, there's two strategies that have to happen. An immediate action plan, no question. We don't want to just talk about it and study it. We do have to move, no question. That's the action plan that's needed. But we still require this national inquiry into missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls, because it will keep the spotlight on the issue. It will help educate not only governments but people across Canada that this issue is alive and it's real, but it's totally unacceptable. And it'll also start opening people's eyes to the root causes. And once that happens, I've always said there's got to be some processes that have to happen. There's got to be an education process, will lead to an awareness process, will lead to an understanding of the issue, and will lead to action. And that's why we need the inquiry. We need to get everybody behind this thing, and that's why we've got to keep pushing very hard that this is just not acceptable in 2014, and we've got to bring about that change.
Next thing, of course, is going to be obviously the role and relevancy of the AFN. There's been many talks about this, and at the end of the day, though, it is the governing body for First Nations people. So the AFN has had its challenges, and some people say it's not effective. What do you say to them, and how would you ensure its effectiveness when dealing with the federal and provincial governments?
I would say, like any organization, no matter where you're at, and I've been at pretty much every level of First Nations organizations, from the community level to tribal council to regional to national levels, and nothing is ever perfect. So I would say let's engage in a process to fix things. What's working, what isn't working, and let's make recommendations to make it more effective and make it more efficient. And that's part of the process. That's part of making it better. And for the Assembly of First Nations, when you look at the history, and there have been some accomplishments that if it wasn't for a strong, united, collective voice, would we have Section 35 in Canada's Constitution? Probably not. Thank the AFN for that. When you think back to the Assembly of First Nations, would we have a multi-million-dollar compensation package for residential school survivors? Probably not. Would we have a specific claims tribunal to speed up the whole land claims issue and process in Canada? Probably not. So there are things that it has done, but I believe it can do more. If we maintain the unity, if we maintain that collective vision about working together, we can push for strategies of Aboriginal rights and title recognized and implemented. We can push for treaty implementation. We can push for resource revenue sharing. We can push for language revitalization acts and everything else to preserve our languages and enhance them. This can happen if we stay united, and that's what the AFN has to become, a more relevant, responsive, and respectful organization.
Well, that leads perfectly into the next point. What does self-determination mean for First Nations and also non-First Nations people?
Again, self-determination, it's we say as Indigenous peoples, we're not ethnic minorities. We might be 4% of the population in Canada. We might be a minority in terms of numbers, but we're not ethnic minorities. We're Indigenous peoples, and we have the inherent right to self-determination. And that means we have our own land, our own languages, our own laws, our own people, our identifiable forms of government. And that's important because according to the United Nations Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, it refers to self-determination. So it's very important. And if we're self-determining as Indigenous peoples, we can set up our own systems of governance, our own legislative system, our own systems of education, our own systems for caring after our people, healthcare, our own citizenship, all those things. So it's very important that we keep exercising that right, even when it comes to resource development, mining and or our pipelines. When you have the inherent right to self-determination, that means you can say yes to development or you can say no to development, making sure that things respect the land and water again. So it's very important that this inherent right to self-determination gets respect not only amongst our own people, but as well the other governments. Like, recognize that we are, I don't say a third order of government, we can be recognized as a first order of government in Canada. And that's what we got to keep working towards.
Well, you've summed up some incredible points, Perry. What I'd like to finish with, though, is a very simple one. Why Perry Bellegarde?
Why Perry Bellegarde for National Chief? You know, Nick, in Cree we have a word, Oskapa Oskapovus means servant or helper. And whether you're helping or being a servant in the Sundance Lodge or the Sweat Lodge, I've done that. In leadership, that's all we are. We're servants and helpers of the people. And it's all about bringing about change and getting things done. And I've been at every level. And I believe working as a team, we get things done. Whether it's getting out of third-party management at the reserve level, or qualifying for new housing again, or building relationships with the industry to build a Tim Hortons at Fort Capel, or working together with the 34 chiefs in Treaty 4 to get the reserve back, the only collectively held reserve in Canada by 34 First Nations in Fort Capel, working as a team to get that done, transferring the Indian Hospital. We get things done. And I'm committed to getting things done on a national level and serving all 633 First Nations communities, because we got to move things forward collectively together. And it's all about getting something done, whether it's moving a comprehensive claims policy, a review that respects Aboriginal rights and title, whether it's moving to treaty implementation processes, treaty by treaty, whether it's the language act or revitalization act we want to move on, whether it's pushing for missing murdered Aboriginal and Indigenous women and girls, whether it's just bringing about a better relationship in Canada and quality of life for our people. I'm committed to doing that. And I can show examples of where we've worked together and gotten things done. And I offer that to the leadership across Turtle Island, that we can do things in a collective, unified way.
Well, there you go, listeners. Again, that's going to be the Special Chiefs Assembly, December 9th, 10th, and 11th. And Perry Bellegarde will be one of the candidates. For more information, you can find links below. But again, thanks for taking the time, and Chimi Gwech.
This edition of Nation Talk has been brought to you by Scotiabank. Respecting your past, trusting your future. Think what we can achieve together.